From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Yo, 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 what is up, beautiful people? It is Thursday, June 25th, 2015, and this is one of my favorite days of the year, folks. Tonight, many young basketball hopefuls will be making their professional dreams come true and will possibly be drafted to the NBA. That's right, the NBA draft is tonight. We'll talk about what the future looks like for two Spartans in particular, concerning Brandon Dawson and, of course, Travis Trice. And we will break down and actually bring to you a mock draft. That's right, Isaac and I will give you our top 20 picks, folks. You don't want to miss that. We'll also be giving you a sneak peek of tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with the head coach of the Michigan State women's soccer team, Tom Saxon. It was a great time sitting down with Tom. And it just so happens that Tom is a big fan of the show. He said he listens, just about every day. How about that? Thanks a lot, Tom. Hopefully he's listening right now. That's a big shout-out to him. And it is Thursday, folks, and each and every Thursday here on Current Sports, we love to hop into our time machine and really look at the past, sports history, if you will. We dub it Throwback Thursday, and break down what exactly happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. You do not want to miss that, as well as we'll take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. You know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this Thursday, June 25th. All right, folks, let's start with the Detroit Tigers. The Cleveland Indians' top prospect, Francisco Lindor, stole the show, reaching base four times and belting his first career home run to help Cleveland jump on Detroit's emergency starter, Buck Farmer, in an 8-2 victory on Wednesday afternoon at Progressive Field. Now starting in place of course, Justin Verlander, who was scratched with mid-back stiffness. Farmer allowed 5 runs on 8 hits and 2 walks in 5 1/3 innings while striking out 7. Tigers now begin a 10-game homestand with a Thursday matinee welcoming the White Sox for a 1:08 p.m. Eastern Time start as part of a 4-game series at Comerica Park. Of course, that's just now, 6 minutes from now. So as the show continues, we will give you a score update on the Tigers and Sox. And Bruce Rondon is headed back to the big leagues. The Tigers will recall the right-handed reliever from AAA Toledo before today's series opener against the White Sox. Rondon posted a 3.45 ERA with 30 strikeouts in 28 2/3 innings in 2013. All right, a big congratulations to Virginia, folks. Pavin Smith homered and drove in 3 runs, and Brandon Waddle turned in another strong College World Series pitching performance, leading Virginia over Vanderbilt 4-2 on Wednesday night for the school's first baseball national championship. How about that? Now, the Cavaliers prevailed in the CWS Finals rematch against the defending champion Commodores and won the Atlantic Coast Conference's first title in baseball, get this, since Wake Forest did it back in 1955. Unbelievable stuff. Congrats to Virginia. Remarkable, remmarkable. All right, Detroit Red Wings forward Henrik Zetterberg is this year's recipient of the King Clancy Memorial Trophy, awarded to the player who best exemplifies leadership on and off the ice and who has made a noteworthy humanitarian contribution to his community. Now, the Red Wings captain rebounded from an injury-shortened 2013-14 campaign to lead his club in assists and points. Congrats to Henrik Zetterberg. Love hearing stories like that. And speaking of the Wings, they released their 2016 schedule. Now, the Wings will start and finish their 2015-16 season with original 6 dates, from a home opener against the Toronto Maple Leafs to a closing date at Madison Square Garden. Now, the Wings will host all original 6 opponents at least once at the Joe, and will play a total of 17 games against the Boston Bruins, Chicago Blackhawks, Montreal Canadiens, Toronto, and the New York Rangers. Now, former Wings coach Mike Babcock and the Leafs will host the Wings for the first time on November 6th. I know many eyeballs will be on that game. Now, there's also the outdoor game against the Colorado Avalanche on February 27th at Coors Field. All right, folks, well, there has been a lot of movement in the NBA. The Memphis Grizzlies are in the process of completing a trade with the Charlotte Hornets for Matt Barnes. The Grizzlies will acquire Barnes from Charlotte for veteran point guard Luke Ritenour, whom Memphis acquired Tuesday from Orlando. The Charlotte Hornets acquire wing Nicholas Batum from the Portland Trail Blazers on Wednesday night in exchange for guard Gerald Henderson and power forward Noah Vonleh. And 26 minutes ago, it was announced that the Hornets actually will trade guard Luke Ritenour to the Oklahoma City Thunder for guard Jeremy Lamb and a 2016 second-round pick. Whew, I had to take a breath after that one, folks. All right, ESPN will exclusively air the NBA draft tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the 13th consecutive year the network has hosted the event. But ESPN has a different approach to the draft regarding the social media use of its talent. Get this, the on-air talent who are a part of the telecast will not be tweeting out selections prior to the announcement from the podium, but that does not apply to all other ESPN NBA reporters who can let the cat out the bag early. Interesting stuff. Huh. I guess you got to follow the right one, right? All right, folks, well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners for this June 25th. Our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/current sports. Use a comment there. I'll read it live here on the air. Or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, I do believe it's that time to start the show.
Welcome to the 1984 NBA Draft. The Houston Rockets select Hakeem Olajuwon, Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley of Auburn University.
The Orlando Magic selects Shaquille O'Neal,
Dwayne Wade,
Scott Pippen, Blake Griffin.
You know, it's pretty cool to hear it, isn't it?
It is. It is. Very cool.
Dwight Howard, Gary Payton, Kevin Durant.
This guy doesn't even know which way is up.
Tim Duncan, Dirk Nowitzki from Würzburg, Germany.
Yao Ming from Shanghai, China.
Karl Malone.
The Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant.
David Robinson.
Allen Iverson.
Boy, it's a good-looking group. David Stern.
Steve Nash.
Jason Kidd.
Patrick Ewing.
Kevin Garnett.
LeBron James.
All right, I'm going to conduct the draft in this after I announce you, okay?
All right. I mean, if anybody can do it, you can.
All right. Okay. You know, what are you laughing at?
Oh, yes. Tonight is the night. Ladies and gents, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Hopefully you're having a great Thursday out there. But yes, the NBA draft is tonight. I mean, can you believe it? It's finally here where we get to see countless players who have been dreaming of that moment. You know, sitting in the backyard. It dates all the way back to when you're sitting in the backyard and you're shooting free throws or you're playing by yourself, just trying to hone your skills. And when that moment comes, you can only imagine what goes through an individual's head. I had that dream. You know, back in the day when I used to call myself Al Jordan, man. I wanted to go to the NBA. I was that kid who had, you know, actually, you don't even see this anymore. I actually had my basketball rim nailed to my garage, right? On the west side of Detroit, Joy Road in Granville. My dad had nailed it up there, man. And an old school basketball rim. And I would go back there. As soon as the weather broke, I would be back there just shooting and doing layup drills, working on my left hand. And even, I was even so crazy, you know, just to show you the mindset I had when I was little, I was so set on crossing that stage one day at the NBA draft that even when it was, you know, pouring down, snowing sometimes, if the cars were cleared, I would go back there with my jacket on, with my gloves, with my hat on, my scarf, all bundled up. And I would dribble in the cold, folks. And, you know, granted that the backyard was shoveled as well, right? But I would go back there, dribble, and even try to play in the snow and almost get, you know, like frostbitten. You know what I mean? That's how crazy I was. But again, that dream went out the window. But man, it's got to be a good feeling to be sitting in the crowd and to hear Adam Silver call your name up along with an NBA team. Oh, I mean, just hearing that montage, it just gives you goosebumps, folks. And I thought that was the perfect montage to start the show because what you heard but didn't get a chance to see during that montage over the years with, of course, David Stern, longtime commissioner of the NBA, when he used to go to the podium and announce names before him, now the new commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver, did, you know, was that, you know, you saw just so many legends. You heard the names like Hakeem Olajuwon and Michael Jordan and Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, you could go on and on and on. And, you know, probably my favorite moment out of that entire montage is when Steve Nash is sitting there. And you probably heard it. You know, Steve Nash is actually sitting there, right? And he just got drafted. And he's sitting there along with the rest of the class. And he's like, hey, how you doing, David Stern? I'm Steve Nash. This is Steve Nash we're talking about, right? And then at the end of it, you know, you see LeBron James in his silky white suit. If you remember, LeBron James wore like an all-white suit. And it's always interesting to see what these guys wear as well, right? Because they want to look fly. The camera's on them. This is one of those moments that years and years down the line, if you wear the wrong suit, you'll get bashed from the very start of your NBA career all the time to when you retire and years after that. But LeBron James, he was looking pretty fly. I mean, he had on an all-white suit, a silky shirt, and David Stern actually tries on LeBron James' suit jacket, and it completely floods him. So, but it's funny stuff, man. But again, we'll see moments like that tonight because I do believe that this is the best NBA draft class that we have had in quite some time, folks. Oh, boy, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to invite, of course, the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer right here on Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, are you as excited as me?
Al, you see me behind the glass. I am like a kid with a cone of ice cream right now. I am smiling from ear to ear. I love the NBA. It's my favorite sport, favorite league. Every time the season starts or it's the finals, I just can't stop smiling. And the draft is also one of those times. So I can't wait. Speaking of NBA fashion, have you seen those new Hawks and Clippers jerseys?
They have. I think I saw the Hawks. Doesn't it have like a neon trim on it?
Pretty bad.
Pretty
bad. Garish, gaudy. Ooh.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's why we hired you, Isaac, because you're such a big NBA fan, my man. I mean, that's why we vibe so well, okay?
That is, yeah.
But first, I mean, let's talk about, to bring a local feel to this conversation before we dive into our mock draft special. And I want to get your thoughts on this, guys, too. Again, 517-355-9527. I would like to know, I mean, who are your top five picks? Who do you think's going 1-5? Or better yet, who are your top 10 picks? Who do you think the Pistons will draft tonight with the 8th overall pick? But, you know, I want to talk about, of course, two individuals who we have been watching throughout their entire Michigan State men's basketball careers, who are hoping to hear one of their names called tonight. Of course, that being Brandon Dawson and Travis Trice, who under the tutelage of Tom Izzo, I really thought that both of those players really hit their peak. As I stated yesterday, when we had Vince Ellis of the Detroit Free Press on, Vince, of course, he's a beat writer for the Detroit Pistons for Freep. And, you know, Vince got a chance to talk to both of those players right after their workouts with the Detroit Pistons to try and make a solid impression to them to try and draft him possibly. But I got to be honest, Isaac, because first off, with Travis Trice, I think that, again, you know, I talk about hitting your peak. For Travis Trice's talent level, for me, when looking at, even before that senior year hit for Travis Trice last season, I did not think that Travis Trice was going to be the type of player that he was in his senior season. I mean, his development from his junior to senior year. Now, granted, I mean, this was really the first healthy year that he had at Michigan State. I mean, just imagine if Travis Trice was healthy throughout his entire, you know, tenure here at Michigan State. I mean, my goodness. But, you know, looking at his senior year, he was that guy that if you needed a bucket or if you needed a big shot, you could go to Travis Trice and he constantly delivered for you. He proved, you know, that he could also be a fantastic distributor. The way he saw the court, he wasn't afraid to take it inside as well, even though I thought he should have did it more so than he did in his senior season. But Travis Trice began to show you that this kid can ball. He can ball. At the end of the day, though, I think he's undersized. He's small, and that matters a lot in a league that, you know, a lot of guys talk about when, you know, when you talk about the college game and they go from college to the NBA, they talk about how the speed just significantly just ramps up times 100 because everybody's fast, everybody's strong. You have to bring something to the table that is out the box and extraordinary. That's why I always bring up Steph Curry. I mean, Steph Curry isn't the fastest guy in the world or isn't the biggest guy in the world. But you know what that kid does is that's extraordinary? His handles are extraordinary, and he can also shoot the heck out of the ball. Those are skills that are very valuable in today's game, especially when you're talking about shooting, because the three-point line is becoming more and more important in the game as time goes on. Travis Trice can certainly shoot the ball, but I just think from a size perspective, Travis Trice could use a few more pounds of muscle. As well as just getting used to the speed of the game at the NBA level. So, if I had to say, as far as Travis Trice first, I don't think Travis Trice is getting drafted tonight. However, I do think you will see Trav play either overseas or somewhere in the NBA Developmental League. I do think that. What do you think about Travis Trice?
I agree with you. I don't think he'll be drafted tonight because for that exact reason. He's undersized. I think he'd get run over by bigger point guards in the NBA, such as John Wall. Anybody with real size, I think.
They'll just body him up.
Yeah, they'd take him. So I don't see him getting drafted for a multitude of reasons, but I think Trice could make the NBA if he played in the NBA DL for a while.
Right.
I see him kind of, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this player, Brian Roberts, a backup point guard for Charlotte. I know him because he used to play for New Orleans, but came out of the D League, 6'1", 173, and averages like 6.7 points per game, 2.3 assists off the bench. I see Trice being able to do something like that or go overseas and have a very successful career because Trice is a great player. He just has physical limitations and defensive limitations that would hold him back in the NBA and stop him from getting playing time.
And you know what, Isaac, what I think also holds a lot of weight, I think that when you, because if you turn back the clock not too long ago, remember Draymond Green? Draymond Green came out of Michigan State and he was drafted in the second round, there were a lot of individuals out there that said that Draymond Green wouldn't be a great player in the NBA. He has to work on X, Y, and Z, right? And, you know, I think that Draymond Green's looking at how he has just matured, how his game has matured in the NBA, And looking at, you know, now how he has reached the pinnacle of success in the NBA and even in winning the NBA Finals and now having a ring, you know, to his resume, I think that, you know, scouts look at that. They look at the track record of success when it comes to respective programs as well. And Tom Izzo, being such a big name in basketball, I mean, Tom Izzo gets respect from anyone in the world of basketball. It doesn't matter if you're talking about the NBA. Of course, when you talk about college basketball, any level of basketball, when you hear the name Tom Izzo, respect is given. So I think that knowing when also coaches and scouts look at Brandon Dawson and Travis Trice, knowing that they came from a Tom Izzo coached program, that may even hold more weight than what they can do on the court. You know what I mean? Now, for Brandon Dawson now. Brandon Dawson is a guy that when comparing, you know, Travis Trice and Brandon Dawson on who I think has a better chance in the NBA, I think it's Brandon Dawson. First off, because he is freakishly athletic. He's one of those guys who can go out there. I always call Brandon Dawson a garbage man. He can get you those gritty rebounds, those hustle plays. He is absolutely at his best when he is in the fast break. He's fantastic. And athleticism can get you a long way in the NBA. But he's got to develop an offensive game as well. You know, he can't be a hindrance offensively where you're basically playing 4-on-5 defensively, because Brandon Dawson didn't show on a consistent basis that, one, he can grab the ball and create his own offense, two, that he has a repertoire of post moves that he can go to, and three, we all know how important the stretch four position is becoming in the NBA, especially when you are undersized. If you're an undersized four now, Isaac, in the NBA, you got to be able to hit the three-point ball now. You have to be able to stretch the floor. Brandon Dawson, I think I saw a statistic yesterday that said something like he was like 0-for-11 from the three-point line. I don't think he didn't hit one three-pointer last year, even though that's not his game. Brandon Dawson has never been known to hit down the three-point shot. But we did see him at one point, you know, here and there, especially during his junior season in the Big Ten tournament. And it ain't that even bleeded over into the NCAA tournament, that Brandon Dawson has a pretty polished 15-foot jumper. He can take it off the glass. He can find that spot. But again, I don't know. I think he has to stretch the court even more. That's fine. A 15-footer is just fine. But can you even create space to get it off? That's the thing. I think Brandon Dawson is limited offensively, and that's what's going to hurt him. And the reason why, if he is drafted, he'll be a middle to late round, second round pick, excuse me. But I wouldn't be surprised. And if I was a betting man, I would put my money on Brandon Dawson not getting drafted tonight and also taking the same route as Trice. I think if anything, I think Brandon Dawson, since he has more of a chance to make, you know, an NBA roster, I could see Brandon Dawson not going overseas and saying, all right, let me play in the developmental league for a little bit and then maybe some team out there would give me a shot.
Al, I see Brandon Dawson. I thought your analysis of him was spot on. But I have to say, a stretch four, if you're an undersized four nowadays, that means you're 6'8", 6'9". Dawson's 6'6".
Exactly.
I don't think he can even play a stretch four. I think he has to play a three, and I don't think he has a jump shot nearly good enough to play that position. So I think he's got too many limitations offensively because he's a post player without a jump shot.
He's a post player in a guard's body, right? Because 6'6", exactly. You're talking about like Kobe Bryant's height, Jordan's height. That's shooting guard height.
Exactly. It's shooting guard height in the NBA. He'd be undersized for a small forward, and that's the only position he has a chance of playing in the NBA, in my opinion. So I think Dawson, I don't think he has too much of a future in the NBA. I see him doing well in the D League and then maybe making an NBA roster, somebody like a Jamario Moon or an Alonzo G, somebody who can dunk it, and that catches people's attention. But then once they come up to the NBA, you realize they can't do that much more than that. So that's kind of what I see from Dawson. But credit to Draymond Green. You talked about the Tom Izzo, Draymond Green effect. I think Dawson will get drafted tonight because of Draymond Green. That's the only reason, because people are looking for. There's an article on the website I write for, The Bird Writes. I didn't write it, but the article was looking for the Pelicans, Draymond Green, with the 56th pick. Mm-hmm. That's what people are trying to do. And a player from Michigan State who played a similar position and had a somewhat similar style is going to look attractive. Although, I don't think he has the motor that makes Draymond Green special, which is why I don't think Dawson will have the success of Draymond Green. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think somebody will draft him. I see it around the 43rd or the 44th pick with the Indiana Pacers.
So late second round, then you think
middle second round more? Yeah,
yeah, middle second round. So you're going with Brandon Dawson getting drafted tonight. I think individuals may sit on their hands and let him develop more. So all right. So what do you think, folks? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Do you see Travis Trice or Brandon Dawson getting drafted tonight in this year's NBA draft? I think the consensus, I think maybe, you know, 99.9% of our audience out there doesn't think that Travis Trice is going to be drafted. But I do think I've heard other opinions where, you know, even Jay Billis right now of ESPN, he thinks that, you know, looking at Brandon Dawson, he could be drafted middle to late round, late second round as well. So we'll see. We'll see. I think it's kind of split 50-50 when you look at the perception of Brandon Dawson and whether or not he'll get drafted tonight. All right. Isaac, are you ready to give our mock drafts?
I'm ready. I'm excited.
This is the moment we've been waiting for. And actually, Isaac and I have put a friendly wager on this year's NBA mock draft. So this will give me extra incentive if I didn't have enough already, right, to watch tonight's NBA draft. Because we're actually doing Double or Nothing on Lunch because we had our spelling bee that we do annually here on Current Sports Radio. And what you won, and I owe you lunch. So we're going to go Double or Nothing on that because I have yet to take you out to lunch yet. So we're going to go Double or Nothing. If I win, then it's nothing. You know, we'll put another wager on down the line. All right, but I may still buy you lunch, my brother. You do great work here at WKRS Current Sports. All right,
thank you.
It's on me either way. All right, here we go. So here's our mock draft. I tell you what, as I just stated before we started this segment, this draft class is one of the best I've seen in the past 5 years. I will say that because I think that this draft class has a lot of talent, And a lot of names that I do believe are going to make a profound impact in the NBA and can right off the bat. So with me, let's go with our first five. Let's go with our top five picks. We'll take a break, come back, and give the rest of our picks, okay? How's that
sound? Sounds good.
That sounds good?
Great.
Okay, let's start now. Well, how about our top 10? Let's make it even. We'll do top 10 and then take a break and then give the other 10 since we're doing the top 20 picks, all right? Okay, so the first overall pick for me, I really think it's a no-brainer. I really think when you look at everything this individual can bring to the table, I think he has the potential to be an all-star. You know, he even has really a chance of being such a transcendent player. You talk about transcending players that years and years down the line are definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think this is a guy who's long, athletic, scores in a variety of different ways. Your number one overall pick will be Karl Anthony Towns, power forward out of Kentucky, taken by the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Well, I wish I could have the same dramatic build up to it, but you said it all. Karl Anthony Towns has more potential than anybody in this draft. He's got the frame of a power forward who can not only succeed in the league, but last in the league for years to come. He's got more of a small town mindset than some of his other, you know, classmates, I guess, in the draft. So he's the perfect fit for the Minnesota Timberwolves at the number one pick, and all the latest rumors have him taking them. And if I were them, I would too. He fits in perfectly with the system. They've got Ricky Rubio at point guard, Andrew Wiggins at shooting guard, and now Karl Anthony Towns at power forward, Gorgui Dieng at center. That's a deep team. That's a team that's going to be good in the future. And
watch
Zach
out.
LaVine, of course.
Yeah, Zach LaVine, who I love. I actually love Zach LaVine's game. Okay, so we both agree with number one. You want to do number two for us, Isaac. Who you got with your number two overall pick, the Los Angeles Lakers, who are, it's been rumored that they could possibly trade that pick?
It has.
Yeah.
There have been rumors about trading picks anywhere, really, from 2 to 4. All of those teams, the Lakers, the 76ers, and Knicks, have reportedly been listening to offers for their picks. But with the number two pick in the draft, the Los Angeles Lakers select Jahlil Okafor, center from Duke. Recent rumors have them taking D'Angelo Russell, and I just don't see it because you don't have the chance to get a franchise big that often. Guards come along much more frequently. Centers are rare. And while I love Russell, I think the Lakers need a center more. When you look at their center position, they're really bereft of talent right there, and they need that help on their roster. Also, Jahlil Okafor, he was touted coming out of high school. He's used to the spotlight. LA suits him.
I agree, and that's the point I wanted to make. I'm going with Jahlil Okafor as well, center from Duke, to be taken by the Los Angeles Lakers. And, you know, if you look at it, I know you've seen the rumor mill as far as the Lakers being interested in arguably the best center behind Dwight Howard in the NBA, DeMarcus Cousins of the Sacramento Kings, and possibly trading that pick to get DeMarcus Cousins. But again, I think, you know, guards, you can get a guard. You know, there's a more, and you look at the talent pool when you know coming out of college, there's more guards to choose from than there are big men. And I think the LA Lakers now, when you look at this, they also take that point in consideration, just like you said. So I don't know that how there's any fallible way how they can pass up on Okafor. But there are some knocks on Okafor. It's been said time and time again that the kid does not play defense. He wasn't that great of a defensive player. And then, you know, you can also counter that argument with, okay, you know, with the way the game is changing now, I mean, if any center goes up there and tries to be aggressive defensively, they're getting called easily for fouls. And you don't want your big guy fouling out, you know, that quick. And that's something that Jahlil Okafor, when he did try to play defense, he will be called for fouls left and right. He's got to play within his means as well, but he's got to improve defensively. I'm not trying to, you know, give an excuse for the young kid, but I do think he will be a great player in the NBA, but he does have to work defensively at that. So we're in agreement with number two. All right, number three for me. I'm going with D'Angelo Russell. I think the Philadelphia 76ers will take the talented guard out of Ohio State. I think D'Angelo Russell is a bona fide star. He is unbelievable. He's got great court vision. He can shoot the basketball. You know, he's got a 6'5 frame. You know, he also has a knockdown jumper, which makes him a threat shooting off the catch. You know what I mean? I love the kid. And I think he can fit right into, you know, that puzzle piece over in Philadelphia. They need some help out there.
And yes, they certainly do.
They certainly do. And I think D'Angelo Russell could be a franchise changer for him.
Yeah, I agree. And Al, I think you must have been looking at my fantasy draft or mock draft online before the game, found at the Isaac Constance flag.
But
anyway, pop.
But D'Angelo Russell, I've got him going to Philly too. Just makes sense. And when you look at Philadelphia's draft history, they like big guards. They drafted Michael Carter Williams a couple of years ago, Tyler Ennis. Now they've got D'Angelo Russell at the 3 pick. If he's available, assuming the Lakers don't take him, then they've got D'Angelo Russell. And he just fits into the system. They've got a lot of big men like Nerlens Noel and, of course, Joel Embiid. So they'll be looking for a point guard to distribute to them and develop them.
Right.
Number 4 pick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got the Knicks getting Kristaps Porzingis.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's Porzingis, isn't it?
Porzingis?
Yeah, okay. I think it's Porzingis, yeah.
He's a big man from, you know, 7'1", tons of talent, good ball handling, great shooter knockdown, very athletic. Problem is he's weak. He's a project. I'm not crazy about the pick, but he has so much talent, so much potential. I think he's the guy that they will go with, especially since the Knicks tend to like foreign talent.
I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to go with the Knicks choosing Justice Winslow, small forward out of Duke. I think Justice is so good. And, you know, if I think when we look back at this draft, other than, you know, a guy like Carl Anthony Towns, I think the second best player out of this draft, it won't be Jahlil Okafor. I don't think it'll be D'Angelo Russell. I think when you look at the end of the day, I think Justice Winslow is going to be that guy that you look at and say, yeah, in 2015, the Knicks chose him, and he has brought new life into this franchise. I think he's going to be – he has the potential to be the best out of this entire draft class, I think. Justice Winslow is my guy. I absolutely love his game.
Yeah. Well, then, number 5, right on cue, I've got the Magic selecting Justice.
You got the Magic.
Winslow.
Okay.
Because Tobias Harris is rumored to be leaving, in which case they've got a void at small forward. The Magic have a strong young team featuring Victor Oladipo, of course, Elfrid Payton from University of Louisiana Lafayette last year. Mm-hmm. So he just fits the team.
Why don't you think the Knicks would take them before the Magic?
Well, I think the Knicks want a big man, like however you say it.
Porzingis. Yeah, Kristaps Porzingis.
And then the Knicks have, of course, Carmelo Anthony. So I think they like to go with a big man, really bolster that position, and just say to Carmelo, you're the guy, do what you can. Whereas I think the Magic have a void at that position, and he fits in perfectly to their young roster.
Okay. All right. Number 6 for me, I think the Sacramento Kings, due to his just lights-out performance this past weekend, I think he played in the playoffs out in Barcelona, I believe, and absolutely just lit it up. I really thought he was going to fall to the Detroit Pistons, but I just don't think he will. And as Vince Ellis actually put us on this yesterday when he was on the show, I think the Sacramento Kings are going to draft Mario Hezonja, small forward out of FC Barcelona. I think he's a fantastic player. He kind of reminds me like Peja Stojakovic back in the day. He can shoot the ball. He's a small forward, power forward. You know, I really like his game. He can shoot the blood out the ball. I think he will be taken with that 6 overall pick.
Well, at number 6, I have the Kings' king, Stanley Johnson. Of course, that's who I wanted the Pistons to get. Mm-hmm. But the Kings look set for a clear out. Of course, the DeMarcus Cousins rumors, Rudy Gay rumors, anybody on their roster rumors with this new George Karl coaching staff. Mm-hmm. So I see Stanley Johnson as a step to the future with them and saying to Rudy Gay, we don't really want you here. We want a new system. And Stanley Johnson, of course, George Karl likes playing fast. Well, they have something in common.
There you go. All right. I like that. All right. Number 7, I'm going with the Denver Nuggets selecting Emmanuel Mudiay, point guard out of Guangdong. I really like Mudiay. He's an excellent pick and roll player. He's got to improve on his shooting. I will say that. That is one knock on Emmanuel Mudiay. He's got really wonderful potential as a defender due to his strength. He's got great lateral quickness. If the Nuggets are able to draft Mudiay and possibly link that with Ty Lawson for a second lottery pick, I think their future will look pretty bright. I don't know.
I think so too.
I like Mudiay at number 7.
All right. At number 7, I actually have the Nuggets drafting Frank Kaminsky.
Okay.
Of course, they are under a new system as well, with instead of George Karl. Like, really, the Nuggets and the Kings are the same teams on different names.
Different jerseys, right? Yeah.
Now it's Mike Malone coaching the Nuggets. But anyway, Malone likes big men. He developed DeMarcus Cousins. So he'll like Kaminsky. He's a project, but he's also ready to go right out of college. Then number 8, of course, the Pistons, the pick everybody's waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
That's Mario Hezonja. And you talk about the best player out of this draft. I think this kid has a chance. You said more Peja, but he's so much more athletic than Peja. So he reminds me more of a Rudy Fernandez mixed with a Ricky Rubio, though, because he can distribute as well. So I think Hezonja's got massive potential. I think he'll be a steal for the Pistons at 8, and I think they'll get him at 8.
Okay. We'll start and see. And number 8 for me, I'm going with a surprise pick here. No one's expecting me to say this, since I think Mario Hezonja is going to be taken early, and I think the Detroit Pistons with the 8th overall pick are going to draft Devin Booker, shooting guard out of Kentucky. After really trading for Ersan Ilyasova, the Pistons, they could look to trade this pick, but if they keep it, I think Booker can come in and play right away. Again, they're looking for a guy who can knock down that 3 ball. Who knows, though? It might be better to trade down and maybe take the best available target, whether that's Sam Dekker, who you know I'm a big fan of. Also, I like Frank Kaminsky as well. Or maybe Stanley Johnson. I could see something happening with that 8th pick. But I could, if anything, I think the Pistons will take Devin Booker tonight.
All right. At number 9, I've actually got the Hornets getting Devin Booker.
Okay.
Especially considering that they just traded away a shooting guard in Gerald Henderson. To get Nicholas Batum. I think Devin Booker fits right in. I think he'll be available at that spot. I think he's a winner. Just coming out of freshman year, he's a winner.
Right.
So he fits Michael Jordan's scheme. I've got them getting the Hornets getting Devin Booker.
Okay, to speed this thing up, could be good due to time here, Isaac. I'm going to go with Charlotte Hornets selecting Willie Cauley-Stein, center out of Kentucky. And number 10, that's where I think Frank Kaminsky will go, to the Miami Heat, power forward, of course, out of Wisconsin. Really like Frank Kaminsky's game. I think he's going to be a fantastic player in the NBA as well.
10, I've got Emmanuel Mudiay going to the Heat. I just see his draft stock just plummeting, just because I think there's a lot of question marks about the guy, especially his shooting touch. And when you look at what Dennis Schroeder did for the Hawks, I don't see too much of a difference. So I think he's no more than a 10 pick, but I think he's a good number 10 pick to the Heat.
Okay, well, there you have it, folks. That is our top 10 picks for tonight's NBA draft. In our mock draft special here on WKAR's Current Sports. When we come back, Isaac, we're actually going to play our sneak peek of Current Sports TV. Once we do that, we'll come back and give the rest of our 10 picks. How's that sound?
To me. Great.
Let's do it. All right. Well, let's hit our first break. When we come back again, as I just stated, we'll give you a sneak peek into Current Sports TV tonight with our fantastic guest, Tom Saxton, who is the head coach of the Michigan State Women's Soccer Program. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870. Folks, each and every Thursday here on the show, we love to give you guys a sneak peek into the Current Sports TV sit-down that we have for that night. And this week, I had the wonderful opportunity of sitting down for the first time with the head coach of the Michigan State Women's Soccer Program, Tom Saxton. Now, Tom is entering his 24th season as the head coach of the Michigan State Women's Soccer Program. He has spent more than half of his life involved in Spartan soccer. A lifelong Spartan, Saxton earned 3 letters as a player before returning to campus in 1986 to assist legendary Spartan soccer coach Joe Baum with both the men's and the new women's program at the time. Saxton was appointed the 2nd head coach in the history of the women's program back in 1991. So it was a pleasure inviting Tom to our WKAR TV studios. And I had to start off by asking, of course, with this being a World Cup year in women's soccer nationally, when you look at the women's
soccer program here in the U.S. of A. They are actually ranked, according to FIFA rankings, as the number two team in the entire world, only behind Germany. But if you look at the men, folks, they're actually ranked 27th in the world and still trying to climb that ladder to be called an elite soccer program internationally. And I had to ask Tom, I mean, when you evaluate the disparity between men's soccer in America compared to women's soccer in America, why is it so in your face?
Primarily, it's a cultural thing. I think thanks to Title IX in the United States that we got women in accelerated sports programs and provided them with access to higher levels, you know, back in the early 70s. And soccer became part of that growth. And I think in some of the traditional soccer countries, Europe, South America certainly, in the Far East, women's sports, other than maybe some of the Olympic sports like gymnastics, ice skating, and whatnot, it wasn't as culturally acceptable for women to play soccer. So although those countries, soccer is the number one team game and it's in their DNA, it wasn't so cool back in the day for women to play the game in some of those countries. So we kind of got a jump start on it. Obviously, we have a great population, a great melting pot, a lot of good soccer folks. And we have a lot of great female athletes that, when they could have chosen different paths to maybe go play basketball or go into track and field or whatnot, a lot of great athletes chose to go the soccer route, and we've benefited from it. I think what you've seen recently is I think that disparity maybe heading in maybe a little bit in two different directions. I do think our men's program is starting to come on. We just had a couple of historic wins and friendlies in the Netherlands and Germany. And our women's team has, which I think was dominant, certainly early 90s, is facing a lot stiffer competition from some of the traditional, especially European powers. Mm-hmm. Brazil, even though they've been knocked out, has really come on. And, of course, China and Japan remain strong. So as it's become more culturally acceptable in some of the other countries for women to play sports, those countries are starting to catch up. So we're going to have to keep moving forward to keep that top ranking on the women's side. And I honestly expect our men to grow in the rankings as the years go move on.
So what you're saying, Tom, it has a lot to do with the limitations that other countries had in hand historically.
That's correct.
Well before soccer really took off in their respective lands, where in America there were no limitations. Allowed to play. They already had that upper hand to begin with.
That's right. And soccer culture, I think, if you look at other countries, is very much it's like American football, and it's a working class sport, and it's the tough guys that go into soccer. So back in the day, in certain countries, they didn't think it was, appropriate for ladies to play soccer. And that's changed, thank goodness, because it's a great game that anybody can play. And now I think the world's catching up and on its way. And we're celebrating a fantastic championship in Canada right now with an Elite Eight that's representing the whole world. All the teams are coming from all over the globe in this Elite Eight, and they're good teams. And I expect some exciting matches here in the quarterfinals and moving on.
Now, in the men's side, you do see it trending upward then.
I do.
Why?
I honestly do.
Why is that?
I think the quality of coaching. I remember, I'm a Michigan kid. I grew up in Flint. And when I was growing up developing in the 70s, my parents and the parents of most of the kids like me had never played the game. So our coaching came from, maybe the English guy that had moved over here to work in the factory or
right.
a German guy. And there wasn't a lot of great coaching. We felt like it was a sandlot game. We were coaching ourselves most of the time. Those generations have turned over now. And now we have people coaching our young folks that have played the game, and not only played the game at a high level. So you look around at some of the clubs around mid-Michigan, there are professional coaches coaching our youth. So that obviously trickles up.
Yeah, that's certainly true. All right, for the women's national soccer team, they've beaten Australia.
Correct.
They've beaten Sweden, Nigeria, and as you just saw, Colombia. Can this team win it all?
They can. I think that I think from talking to folks working our camps this week and, just kind of in anticipation for this show, just kind of picking some brains of people that have been watching, mm-hmm. we'd all like to see more offense. And if they can generate goals, and they did it against Colombia, although Colombia had a little bit more of the play than we expected. If they can generate scoring opportunities, they certainly can, because they're as good a defensive team as there is in the world. And despite her off-the-field issues, Hope Solo is a very, very good goalkeeper. So defensively, they're as good as anybody. Can they generate the goals against the better teams as we go through the stretch run here?
And that's another thing I want to bring up. When you talk about Hope Solo, fantastic goalie, fantastic
sure.
player. She's had multiple off-the-field issues, domestic abuse issues that have in my opinion, haven't been publicized as much as they should have. I mean, I truly think, Tom, that if she had, if this was the same track record, if you look at Hope Solo's track record with off the field issues, if this was a male athlete, it would have been everywhere.
I agree.
How does a coach, you being one, how do you deal with that sort of distraction on this type of a level?
You know, I don't even have an answer for that. I know, you know, we have very, very high standards for our student athletes at Michigan State, and some of the things that Hope Solo's been involved in would be deal breakers in, you know, in our program. I will say this: many of us on the women in the women's games were surprised after some of the last stuff that came out that she was even chosen for the squad, because it was distracting. It was really bad publicity for the national team, and I've gone on record saying that she must be really, really far ahead of the other choices they have for them to stay with her. And she is, she's a world-class goalkeeper, maybe the best in the world. But
right.
As you suggested, with some of the stuff we've seen, you know, if this is with what's gone on in the NFL and whatnot, you're right. I mean, it would have been, her career may have been over, so who
it
knows?
May have led my show tonight.
Yeah, who knows?
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
That's right, who knows?
Oh, goodness. Okay, now, going back to disparity, Tom, did you see that disparity once you came back and got a chance to coach with legendary Joe Baum?
You know, I think that it was in the mid-80s, and that was a crucial time where the women's game was taken off, and the men's game was gradually getting better as players got better coaching. So I'd say when I was lucky enough to get the head coaching job in 91, it was in that next decade as universities across the country started to invest big dollars into women's soccer, we saw a huge jump. And as scholarship opportunities became available, clubs started to recognize that and pour more money into their coaching staffs, and it became youth soccer is a big business now, and it's led to some great development, and it's certainly taken off. But I think since 2000, as more and more kids play the game, I think both genders continue to move forward. But as I suggested earlier, on the women's side, the rest of the world's catching up fast. So
they're catching
up
fast. They've
got a tough job.
Now, you and, of course, head coach Damon Rensing of the men's soccer program, you guys have done remarkable things for the soccer programs here at Michigan State University. You know, when you were a player, Tom, what was the atmosphere of games like when you played?
You know, it was really about us and people that loved the game, because we were kind of you know, I won't say we were a varsity team. We got to travel. We got uniforms. We were supported by the athletic department, of course, and by the university. But we didn't really have a lot of passionate fans or anything. So we really had to love it and go out there. I will say that we would look forward to every other year going down to Indiana University, which they had a legendary college program, still do, and they had cultivated a following down there. So we'd come from East Lansing and head down there, and we'd go into a stadium where there's 3,000 or 4,000 people. We had not seen that before in those days. And now Damon has drawn fantastic in the last several years, and we do quite well with the women too. So the game has arrived, and I'm excited for our players and for everybody involved. But honestly, Al, I'll tell you what, 25 years ago, I could have never imagined what we see out at Old College Field at DeMartin Stadium.
It's remarkable. Like, when I go to cover, you know, one of your guys' games now, I mean, I go there and you guys have your own cheering section now. I mean, you hear the cowbells. I mean, the atmosphere is
cool.
Off the charts,
it's
off the charts. I mean, did you ever see this?
I can't honestly say that I did back then, but I'm excited for everybody, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Yeah, I can only imagine. All right, now, I want to bring up, you know, probably the most decorated player in your program's history. Coaching Laura Hybor from 2008 to 2011, graduated with every scoring record. She was first team All Big Ten all 4 years when she was here at Michigan State. I mean, what was that like coaching Laura?
You know, that was fantastic. She is such a, you know, as I mentioned to you earlier, she was an academic All-American as well. So she was the true total student athlete, for our first ever first round draft choice to the pros. Got capped for the under-23 national team a couple times overseas. It was just a delight. And she had, honestly, when we started recruiting her, she was in 10th grade, Hudsonville Unity Christian. You know, Grand Rapids has always been good to Michigan State, so we feel like we have a good connection over there.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell, just watching Laura as a young player, is she had that knack for scoring. And it's almost that inherent ability to just anticipate and find the back of the net that isn't something, if you could teach it, you'd be a multimillionaire. I mean, she just knew how to get in the right place at the right time. She was quick, she was a good athlete, but she by no means was an imposing athletic figure. She got it done with that special quality of anticipation and understanding where to be when, and she could put the ball in the back of the net like nobody I've ever seen since. And I honestly, you know, despite all the great players that have come through the Big Ten, I haven't seen a truer goal scorer in any program in my whole career, and I've been there since day one in the Big Ten.
You haven't, and you know, in sports they call it that it factor, something that you're just born with. You can't really teach. Yeah. And again, you just mentioned, I mean, you haven't seen it since. Do you see any players on your current roster or maybe around the Big Ten that have the potential to be that great?
Well, I would have to mention our last year's freshman, Jamie Chesley. Jamie was all Big Ten freshman team. Great speed, a little bit different than Laura, but really is tenacious around the goal. And I think she has great potential. Whether she'll get to that level, I wouldn't want to put that kind of pressure on her, but she'll be very helpful for us in the years ahead. And another great kid with a knack for scoring goals. And she had a good year last year, and I think she'll only grow as she gets used to the physical play in the Big Ten. So hopefully we're moving in that direction with her.
When you have a kid that talented, I mean, for you, Tom, how do you approach coaching a kid like that? Because you don't want to, you know, put a leash on her too much, but at the same time, you know, you want to teach her how to be a great player and to reach that ceiling that you know she's capable of. How do you go about approaching that as a coach?
I think a lot of it is the environment creates the demands, with the fact that we always say when we're recruiting, the ladies that we're recruiting, the girls that we're recruiting, you're playing youth soccer, we're playing women's soccer. And so the physical elements of the game completely change. The ability for stronger players to strike the ball, to serve crosses in, those come in at a lot greater pace. The size of the goalkeepers. So with Laura, part of it for her is she had to adjust to the physical demands of getting beat up by big, strong center backs, and, you know, dealing with crosses hit in great pace, dealing with 6-foot-tall keepers that are coming out trying to punch through her head. So part of it is just adjusting in the environment, and that's our job, to put them in that environment. And then, you know, we have our own ways of approaching things, and you may, or, you know, every team, every player in soccer has to defend and has to be able to attack like a basketball or a hockey player. They've got to play both ways. But you can certainly set up systems where you can take a little bit of the defensive responsibility off of a great goal scorer like that,
right,
and let them use their energy for what you want them to do, which is score goals.
I think that's a good method, Tom. Yeah. I tell you that. All right, before we let the 12 men get at you, I have to talk about in 1993 when you were a part of the NCAA selection committee.
Yeah, that was great.
What was that process like?
That was a lot of fun, and that was an eye-opener for me. I actually inherited that position from Joe, as he had been named to it, and I got kind of filled into it. And we basically spoke every week on a conference call and just sorted out the teams that we were button heads with in our region and trying to rank them. And then as it all boiled down, like it probably still is in basketball and in all the sports, the selection Sunday was crazy. I mean, we really literally went through, you know, 70 teams that could have been worthy to get in, and it eliminated them one at a time. So I have great appreciation for what the NCAA committees do in this day and age, because there's more teams that get in now, but there's more teams. There's 315 Division I women's soccer teams, so they have a lot of work to do to whittle that down to the field of 64.
And when Michigan State pops up in that conversation, you actually have to leave the room, right?
That's
correct. Is that how it works?
Yes.
So during that time, you had to go out the room while they're talking about your team, right?
Yeah, we actually had, when we, the last time we got a bid in Laura's era, mm-hmm. Shelly Applebaum, our senior associate athletic director, was on the committee representing the Big Ten. So she would tell me that, hey, you know, you guys are in a good position, but I got to get out of the room to see if, you know, so I'm not guaranteeing you anything.
Right,
so, but
right.
We put together a good enough resume to get in, and it was exciting. We've been four times, and we're anxious to get back.
Again, folks, that is Tom Saxton, the head coach of the Michigan State women's soccer program. Again, you can catch that episode in its entirety on your television tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. It's our second break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's show by bringing you picks 11 through 20 as Isaac and I break down who we think are going to be taken in this year's NBA draft. We'll also have a few Throwback Thursday moments for you. Don't go anywhere, folks. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this June 25th, 2015, it is NBA Draft Night. Well, before we gave you that sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV sit down with Tom Saxon, the head coach of the Michigan State women's soccer program, we gave you our picks 1 through 10 on who will be taken in tonight's NBA draft. Isaac, really quick, I mean, what's your 11 through 20 look like, man?
All right, 11, I've got the Pacers getting Willie Cauley-Stein, 12, the Jazz with Miles Turner, 13, the Suns, Trey Lyles, 14, the Thunder, RJ Hunter, of course, hit that amazing shot in the tourney, 15, the Hawks get Sam Decker, 16, the Celtics get Kevin Looney, they could use a stretch 4, 17, the Bucks get Montrezl Harrell, 18, the Rockets actually get Tyus Jones, getting him before Jerry and Grant.
Okay.
19, Wizards, Bobby Portis. And 20, the Raptors get Justin Anderson.
Interesting. Our list certainly varies. I'm going with 11. Indiana Pacers will select Trey Lyles, power forward out of Kentucky. 12, Utah Jazz, Miles Turner, power forward out of Texas. 13, Phoenix Suns select Stanley Johnson. I think he's going to drop that far, Isaac. Small forward out of Arizona. Oklahoma City Thunder, Cameron Payne, point guard out of Murray State. 15, Atlanta Hawks, Bobby Portis, power forward out of Arkansas. Boston Celtics with a 16 pick select Sam Decker, small forward out of Wisconsin. 17, Milwaukee Bucks, Kevin Looney, power forward out of UCLA. Houston Rockets, Kelly Oubre, small forward out of Kansas. 19, Washington Wizards get Jerian Grant, guard out of Notre Dame. And 20, the Raptors are going to select RJ Hunter, shooting guard out of Georgia State. Yeah.
All right.
Some interesting, definitely some differences between my list and your list from 11 through 20. We'll see what happens tonight, man. So we got lunch on it, all right?
Oh, yeah. It'll be interesting.
Definitely. All right, let's do a quick throwback Thursday where we hop into our current sports time machine and look at what happened on this Thursday in sports history. Here we go.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the spot for Brown. She's yes. Got it.
So what happened on this Thursday, June 25th, in sports history? Well, in 1918, Babe Ruth became the second American League player to hit a home run in four consecutive games. In 1921, Jock Hutchinson became the first U.S. citizen to win the British Open. In 1985, ABC's Monday Night Football began with a new lineup. Get this one. The trio was Frank Gifford, Joe Namath, and O.J. Simpson. Wow. 1985, the New York Yankees officials enacted the rule that mandated that the team's bat boys were to wear protective helmets during all games. In 1997, the NHL officially approved expansion to 30 teams by the year 2000 with the announcement of new teams in Atlanta, Columbus, Minnesota, and Nashville. In 2002, Muhammad Ali received a humanitarian award at the second annual BET Awards. And in 2003, Todd McFarlane bought Barry Bonds' 73rd home run ball at an auction for $517,500. Also, a few birthdays. Willis Reed, Dikembe Mutombo, Dale Curry, the father of Steph Curry, Mike Stanley, and Doug Gilmore. How about that? Happy birthday to all of them. Well, folks, we unfortunately are out of time on today's Current Sports. Thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic draft night and be easy, people.